You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. How about finding out that if you had descendants that were part of history, not necessarily American history, but anywhere in the world, and because you had descendants who were part of the past, you were offered an opportunity to have citizenship, free citizenship, in another country. Well, that's exactly what my guest this week did. Anne Hand is a newly minted author. Her new book is Austrian Again, Reclaiming a Lost Legacy. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Anne Hand about her new book and the fascinating background that led to the book, how she got to this point, and also helped her in researching and also finding out more about her background and the legacy of her family. So stay with us for the next half hour, and you'll find this a fascinating segment. Ann, nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Al. I'm really glad to be here. Hi, everybody.
This is, like I said, I'm Italian, and so far, Ann, I have not had any offers. In fact, I think the country of Italy, and I've been there a number of times, would probably rather not have me as a citizen or have me over there. But in this case, the country Austria offered citizenship to those who were descendants of Jews who fled the Nazis during World War II. Prior to that knowledge. Was there anything, I mean, did you know about, the Holocaust? Did you know about, what was taking place in Austria during World War II based on great-grandparents, grandparents, descendants? Was this all brand new to you once you got that notice?
So I knew a bit about the history. I like history a lot, and I think, everybody who's interested in history is aware of, World War II and, everything, all the atrocities that happened in Europe. But in terms of my family, no, nobody ever talked about it, really. And I think that for me, it was a really interesting experience to take this concept, that I had read about in books, and I'd been to some memorial sites and things like that, and it was an opportunity going through this process to really personalize the entire experience and really take history and see it in a different way.
But obviously you knew from birth that Austrian Jews, correct?
Yeah, so my family is Jewish. Both my parents are Jewish. When I was a kid, I remember we had to do an exercise in elementary school, kind of color in the countries from where your family is from. And I had a bunch of different countries from Central and Eastern Europe. So this one corner of my family, my grandfather's family, was Austrian. And they lived in Vienna up until World War II, really. It was... that was their home. That was where they lived for many, many years, and that was where they emigrated to the U.S. from.
Now, this all started in 2020. You were reading The Guardian newspaper and saw a headline where the Austrian government was offering citizenship. Obviously, it got your attention, right?
It did, because, it was a little confusing in a way. Austria is a very... I guess, interesting country in some ways, in many ways, actually, but in one particular way with World War II, where, for many years, so historically, obviously the Nazi Party originated in Germany, and Austria was the first country that it absorbed as part of its international expansion. And for many years, after the war and everything, Austria would say, we were victims too. We were, we were the first victims of the Nazi regime. And I think as the years have gone on, that historical story has come to a different reckoning, where Austria has really taken a lot more responsibility for its complicity within, within World War II, even if the Nazi Party originated in Germany. Austro-fascism was alive and well before the Nazis annexed Austria. And they, for I would say, a lot of kind of mainstream Austrians at the time, they they weren't necessarily upset to be annexed to Nazi Germany. And what happened, you know, very, you know, early on in the World War II process, before war was even declared, in 1938 to 1939, is that, you know, Austria's Jewish population, most of which was in Vienna, was basically forced out, or if they stayed, you know, pretty much everybody who was left eventually was deported to concentration camps. So it's not that, you know, the Austrians, and of course there were, you know, resistance fighters and everything, but I would say the sort of bulk of Austrian sentiment during World War II, you know, was not what you read about, say, in Denmark, where everybody stood up to support the Jewish population and get them out and get them into Sweden. No, really the Austrian population sort of got behind the Nazi party and subjugated its Jewish population.
So I'm going to assume that with that knowledge, that you weren't, as soon as reading about this offer, wasn't ready to just pack up your bags, purchase an airline ticket, and fly over there. I mean, there had to be a lot of back and forth, and, you know, should I do this? Is this something I would even consider doing? Knowing the past, a lot of things, you know, must have been going back and forth in your mind. So it wasn't a clear cut idea, right?
I thought that it would be a really interesting process. I think interesting is kind of the key word. And I didn't really know where it would lead. I didn't know if we would actually get it, because if you're kind of going through the generations, the person that we ended up qualifying through, who was there from through 1938, was my great-grandmother. But my grandfather had left in the 1920s. And so if they were, you know, thinking about it in terms of the most recent generation, I don't think we would have qualified. And my grandfather left, you know, for the reason that, you know, a lot of Italian families left, a lot of Irish families left, just economic opportunity in general. Austria between World War One and World War Two was very economically turbulent, and there weren't a lot of opportunities. And, you know, he was young, and he already had two siblings in the U.S. And he said, you know, I'm going to take my chances and see where it goes. So his story, I think, is a more typical kind of, you know, American immigration story from Europe from the, say, 1880s to 1920s. But because this pathway was specifically designed for descendants of victims from World War II, you know, it wasn't through him. It was through his mother, who remained in Vienna up until basically, you know, she was very lucky to be able to get out when she did, when things really started getting bad and complicated. And so we didn't know if we would qualify to start with. And there was a lot of conversation, exactly what you're saying, Al, about, you know, what does this mean? What does this look like? And for me, I think the important thing was just trying to understand what happened to my family a little bit better. This wasn't anything that people really talked about in conversation. It was more like, oh yeah, they lived there and then they came here. And when you see this thing that's so strange and like you're saying, you know, really extraordinary that a country's saying, okay, if you fit within this group of people, if you're a descendant of this group of people, you know, we're sorry, and we want to offer this to you as a sort of atonement, as a sort of restoration, whatever it is you want to call it. That's different. That's something worth exploring.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that, because you got me thinking here now. I'm trying to picture being in your shoes, but I do want to take just a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author Anne Hand. Her new book is Austrian Again, and we're talking about this is a true story, and as you know, nothing on The Public Eye is fictional, well, except for the host. But other than that, this book is based on an article that Anne came across back in 2020 about the Austrian government offering citizenship to descendants of Jews who had fled the Nazis back during World War II. And I'm thinking, as you're talking and leading up to today's to this segment, I'm thinking I would be on the fence. Like you said, I don't think I would, you know, oh, geez, what a great opportunity. I'd have to think about, because as you were talking, during World War II, many Austrian citizens, let alone the government, weren't necessarily sympathetic to the Jewish people. So I think I'd be somewhat ambivalent about just packing my bags and you know, moving over there. But at the same token, I'm also thinking, is there a guilt trip going on with the Austrian government back in 2020? I mean, how do they come about deciding, hey, let's offer free citizenship to those that qualify under these parameters? How does that all come together?
You know, I'm not totally sure. And I think it's a great question. It's certainly something you can be really cynical about, or you can be kind of a little bit more open about. I know that there had been, you know, sort of efforts over the years to try to get the Austrian government to, you know, be much more honest about, you know, the role that it played and the role that its citizens played, you know, in World War II and in pushing out the Jewish population and in what they call Aryanizing all of the property from Jewish citizens at the time. And yeah, I haven't packed my bags. I haven't moved over. But, you know, the entire process really, I mean, that's why I wrote the book, ultimately. It was a lot to think about. It was a lot to process. It was a lot to understand and understand my place as a descendant of these people in a very different way. And it's hard. It's hard to sort of reckon with all of that. In my case, I want to give the current generation of Austrians the benefit of the doubt. Everybody that I've interacted with throughout this process, all of the Austrians, whether it was through the consulate in New York or whether it was sort of friends of friends, you know, after I finished the process, everybody's been very open and very genuine and very glad that, that, you know, I accepted this olive branch. Mm-hmm. And they do see it as maybe not a way to make everything better, but a way to open the doors again and just say, hey, you know, we value you. We value your family's contributions. We value what you can bring to the world. And it's something very touching, and it's something that I wasn't expecting, to be perfectly honest, because I think I came into the process a lot more cynical, just, oh, well, you know, it's a small country and they want people maybe with similar values or with more of a connection, and this is kind of an easy way to do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've just been very touched with how the response from Austrians and the way that it does seem like they're trying. And I think that there's probably a generational shift here, where when you think about most people who experienced World War II directly at this point have passed away. And mm-hmm. So you're sort of passing the torch to younger generations.
Right.
And some of that comes with understanding the past differently and understanding what people did and why they did it in a different way. And if this kind of openness, and it's a very limited openness, it's a very narrow opening, but if this kind of openness is the result of that, then I'm happy to play a small part in it and to encourage people to think about their own identities and think about what this kind of understanding can look like for their own families' histories and their own place in the world.
Yeah, no quite. In fact, you're reading my mind, because I'm thinking, even before before we even did the interview, I'm thinking a new generation sees things in a different light and does not harbor the same thoughts that permeated that generation during World War II. But let me go a step further and ask you, I'm sure you didn't keep this all to yourself. I'm sure you spoke with you know, immediate family and close friends. What kind of, you know, were there mixed reactions? Were people all for this? Did people say, you know, Ann, forget it. You know, don't even worry about it. Just go on with your life. Never mind what happened and what opportunities are being, you know, on the table. Forget about it. Were they on board? Were they non-supportive? Were they supportive?
Nobody was unsupportive, but there were certainly levels of of support. And a lot of, you know, our family conversation was about what my great-grandmother and what my grandfather would have thought about all this, because they're the ones who left. And in my grandfather's case, he left when he was 18 and he never wanted to go back. Mm. He was just like, this place has nothing for me. And I just have no interest and intention of ever associating with it again. And that was his journey and that was his experience. And I think in a way also the world is smaller now. So that in, you know, back when he retired in the 70s, it was, he could have gone, he could have sort of seen what had happened, you know, in the 50 years since he had left. But at the same time, it was hard. It was a schlep. It was a lot of different things. And so now everything is a lot more connected. Everything is a lot easier. And so it's also a question of, well, what would my great grandmother and my grandfather think of the world now? Not just the world that existed, you know, when they passed away. So it's, you know, these are all hypotheticals and we don't know the answers, but I think in a way it's important to just have these conversations and honor their memories and, you know, recognize their realities and what they lived and then say, okay, well, you know, if they were here today, like, what would they think and how would they react to something like this? And maybe they would be more open. And, you know, I don't know. They're all hypothetical.
Yeah, and they may just say, hey, look, you know, you're a grown person. Make up your own decisions. You know, see for yourself. You know, experience it for yourself. And then decide whether a move such as that would even make sense. I know, as I said, from a person who's had from an Italian background, my grandparents came from Italy, and like you said, your grandparents, they left for a reason, and they were unhappy, and they never went back like your grandparents, great grandparents. So it's you have to understand the time, what might have been going through their minds. But again, going back to what you said earlier, and I think it makes a lot of sense, is that, you know, let's fast forward. That was the 1940s. We're here in the year 2000. We're in the 2025. This all came about in 2020. So a lot of time has passed. You know, a lot of dialogue has gone back and forth. Much has been written about the war. And I think a lot of people today, as you said, younger generations, disdain the you know, first of all, the war itself, but also what took place. But most importantly, and this is the question, the $1 million question I've been dying to ask you, is you haven't actually made the move. Have you even thought about a trip over there just to see, you know, what's it like? I mean, you know, people go to Europe for vacations. They come back and say, oh, it's beautiful, but this is home. Why not the move? Has there been something that's held you back?
No, there's nothing really to hold me back. I mean, but I have no reason to move. I mean, my life is awesome here. One thing is, you know, making such a drastic, you know, sort of life change. And no, I have no reason to. But at the same time, to your other question, I mean, I've only been to Vienna once, and it was for like 12 hours when I was 22. I mean, you know, I was a tourist, 100% tourist. And we're talking about going in March. There's a conference I'd like to go to, and I'd like to also see if I can find a couple places to talk about the book. Because at this, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but at this point when I travel, it's a little exhausting to be a tourist, and I like to have stuff to do to kind of, you know, feel like I have a reason to be in a place. Because you can go to the church and you can go to the opera house and you can go to museums and all of that. And sure, I can still do that. But, you know, I'd like to meet people and I'd like to feel what the place feels like now to me for where I'm at. Because to your point, you know, like, I'm 40. I'm not looking to, you know, reinvent my life from one day to the next. But with this book and with this whole process, I feel like I went through something that is very different, but also in a way like very universal, for especially coming from the U.S. We all have families with these immigration stories that we don't necessarily know anymore, and understanding them better and understanding how we can fit into all of this it's a really important journey for, I think, everybody to take.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think you're exactly right. I think if we were to sit with a group of people from diverse ethnic backgrounds, they would all say, "Oh yeah, you know, it was a what an offer, something worth considering." But as you said, and I feel the same way, this is home. This is where I've made my life. Everything's going. Nothing's perfect. There's no such thing as perfect. We know that. But this is, you know, this is home base. Visiting is one thing, and talking to people. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, talking about the book over there, I'm sure you'd find many of the people in the audiences would be very interested in hearing this story, especially knowing that the government has extended this offer and how you interpreted it and the research that you did. But again, something else sticks out about the book and about the experience and what you're talking about. And that, again, goes back to generational changes. You know, many, many decades have passed now since that time. People are, you know, the globe is a smaller place today. It doesn't seem as mysterious as it did back in the 40s. Travel to Europe and back, or any place in the world, is a norm for many, many people. So it wouldn't be surprising to find many people like yourself, if they were in that position, to at least pursue it up to the point that you did. With all of that said, what advice would you give if you had friends, relatives, or just somebody that you were speaking to a group and you found out that there were people in the audience that had a similar opportunity but were on the fence? How would you handle it? How would you counsel them?
So there's always kind of a practical way of taking it, and there's always a more emotional way of taking it. And it depends on the person, right? If they're going to say, "Oh, this is, you know, objectively, I want to have options and this is a great way to have options," or, you know, "I really want to understand my family better and I want to kind of get into the emotional part and the research and all of that." And it's sort of a pendulum. And you're going to be in different places on the pendulum, you know, throughout the process. And then depending on kind of what you want, you can send in your documents, you can apply and see what happens, or you can just kind of sit on it and sit on the research that you've done and feel good that you've taken the time to understand your family better. And ultimately it depends, you know, on every individual person and what they want and where they see opportunities, where they see home, where they see a lot of things. And these are very, very personal and very individual questions and decisions. But I would really encourage anybody who's in a position like this, at least to do the family research. Even if ultimately, you know, you're not going to move, you don't see any reason to have a second passport, to do anything like that, it's important to understand where you come from. And I think it gives all of us a lot more empathy for our families, and then also for other people who are sort of earlier on in that process in the U.S., earlier in the immigration process, earlier in the integration process. And it gives us a different perspective, I think, more globally.
Yeah, and I want to include the fact that not only is Anne, an author, she's an educator, but more importantly, a global expert in education and development, publishing articles and speaking about technology and society. And you know what, Anne, this all makes perfect. I mean, you have this experience. You can speak firsthand. You've talked with family members. You've researched going way back, your family heritage going back to that period. And now people like yourself, I consider you like a bridge to the gap that we had 30, 40, 50 years ago no longer exists, because, the one, we have the art of technology has enabled us to find out anything about anybody or any place in a matter of minutes if you're willing to do the research. But more importantly, you went through this process. But more importantly, people like yourselves are like an ambassador to a new generation. Look, this opportunity may come to you as well. And you said this. It may not be the fit. It may not be the perfect thing. But at the very least, you can research your history, the lineage. And so many, I think it's a lot of people, and I don't want to downplay anybody by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't know that a lot of people would say, well, I think I had a grand, you know, my family came from Ireland or Italy or Poland. But other than that, I don't know much about it. And I'm always surprised by that, Anne. Why don't you want to know more? Do you feel that way?
I think people just kind of tell the stories that they need to tell. And there's a lot that we don't ask and we don't question about, you know, our grandparents and our great grandparents. We just kind of know the stories that have been passed down. And it's amazing. I was shocked, honestly, when I did my own research, how easy it is to find a lot of this information online now, not just with Ancestry. I think Ancestry is probably the best, the most robust of all of the online search engines, at least the ones that I've used for this genealogy research. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of very specific ancestry type sites for different people who came from different parts of the world, from different countries. And a lot of this information, you know, you can find really easily. It's been digitized. I think people just don't realize how easy it is now to find out the information. And sometimes also, you know, we don't really want to question the stories that we're told, because then that brings in a new reality as adults.
Yeah.
But it gets to what you're saying about the generational shift. And if you don't take responsibility for your past, and you don't really understand, you know, where your family comes from, then, you know, you're, the way that you move through the world is different. And, you know, and I don't want to fault people for not doing this, because maybe it seems to me, before I did all this, it seemed like a niche sort of activity to do. But it's not really, it's super easy. And it's something that, you know, after I did it for myself and after I talked about it, you know, with friends and extended family and everything, I realized that, you know, some of it's just, you know, we live our lives and we're busy and we have our heads sort of thinking a certain way, and we don't realize just really how the internet and how these databases have grown and made all of this research incredibly easy for people who are interested and want to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah. I, you know, if you stick to just reading the history of a particular period, whether it be in this country or any place in the world, and you settle on just that, you only know that story. We fast forward here to the year 2025, and you've lived it. You know, what took place in the past was really the impetus for you getting to this point. Had you not read that article, you might not have even bothered to research the past, not only about family members, but about the experiences they went through, some of their motivations for staying or coming to this country, starting a new life. I think it's fascinating. Personally, I think the more you know about not only your own life, but, you know, those, especially those that are closest to us, family members who came before us, it really helps to put everything into perspective. We've got a few moments left, but most importantly, the book, Austrian Again, I keep thinking, okay, you're born Jewish, but you named the book Austrian Again. Does that mean that you consider yourself both Austrian and Jewish? How's that come about?
So the title, I wanted it to be self-explanatory. So I think that we all contain, you know, a lot of different identities within us. You know, what's the line? I contain multitudes from Walt Whitman. And to me, going through this process was also a way to sit with those different pieces of myself in a much more comfortable way.
Yeah.
So for my family to be Austrian again, because it's not just me, it's other people in my family as well. It represents that connection to the past, but it doesn't negate who we are as Americans, as Jews, as, you know, being from New England, being from New York, being from wherever, you know? Yeah. And I think it's also important to recognize that complexity of, you know, who we all are and what we all enjoy and where we all come from and how that shapes and molds who we are. And I also just want to thank you for something that you said before, just about being a bridge into these different, you know, ways of thinking about identity and self and the complexity of all that. Because that, in a way, I guess, that was the goal of the book. It was to try to understand that in a different way. And by using my specific example, hopefully more people will embrace that kind of complexity and not try to simplify things. We all are really complex.
Exactly. And the book did, you know, enlighten me in that regard. It's like, you know, going back, if I go back to Italy, it may not be the country I want to spend the rest of my life. I may never move there. This is still home. But nonetheless, there is a culture there, and part of my family got their start there, and that's all part of that, what makes us who we are. And the more we know about that, I think the more we can understand different groups of people, you know, different backgrounds, and not always make harsh judgments about one another. And that's your book was very very enlightening in that regard. We're going to close out the show, but I just want to ask you real quick, if people want to reach out to you directly, how might they do that? Is there a website? Is there an email or a Facebook page, or how can they do that?
Twitter and LinkedIn are the best for right now, and I do need to set up an author page. That's on the to-do list before the book is out in October, but it's up for pre-order now on Amazon and Bookshop and Barnes & Noble. So, yes, I'll have an author site up soon, but in the meantime, probably, or am I supposed to call it Twitter, or is it X now? What am I supposed to call it?
I know. I get confused myself. I'll have to call Elon this afternoon and see what he, you know, what's the proper way of doing all of this. But
yeah,
again,
I got to double check all of it, right?
But the book is a great read, and it will be out this fall. I always say the fall is the best time. I mean, the temperatures may not be ideal for beach sitting, but it certainly is a great way to, you know, sit down in your favorite chair with a nice cup of coffee or tea and read Austrian Again, Anne's new book. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.